We are back. Gonna do two trade deadline division previews, starting with the Atlantic, then we're gonna get to the Northwest after that. We're sponsored today by our friends at Helix Sleep. HelixSleep.com/capspace is your URL to get $50 towards your custom mattress and sleep on the same bed that I do. Well, not exactly the same brand, because you can customize it for yourself. Let's start with the Boston Celtics here. They use cap space, obviously, in the off season, but added, with the room exception, Aaron Baines and a few other salaries as well. So they find themselves $9.3 million below the tax, also have an open roster slot. Let's take a look, though, at just kind of what they need as a team. I think that's the place to start here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because what they need for right now is a little bit different than next year, because I think it would be good to add another perimeter player who can be a part of their second unit. And theoretically, if they're adding Gordon Hayward and not really losing anything because they have all these guys under contract for next year, that player would be less essential next year. But that kind of makes sense with the disabled player exception, because that player has to be on an expiring contract. So I would say you could either go the playmaking route or the shooting route. I'm still not completely sold on the Rozier smart combo in the playoffs. I think that those guys are both talented, but I don't think they can necessarily be the foundation of a reliable offense. But shooting would help too, because it would just give those guys more space to operate.
Yeah, and that disabled player exception, everyone will recall that they got that because Gordon Hayward got injured. What you can do with that disabled player exception, it is worth $8.4 million, and you can either sign a player up to $8.4 million for 1 year, or you may trade for a player in the last year of his contract. And there obviously has been a lot of speculation around what they could do with that. Now, of course, you still have to give some assets up if you're trading for someone. But yeah, I mean, I think pretty clearly the two needs are more shooting. I think they need like one real dead eye shooter. I mean, they have a bunch of guys who can hit shots. You know, I know Tatum is hitting really well, but he's not creating a ton of threes on his own, right? He's not a guy who's going to come off screens for threes or anything like that. Jaylen Brown, you know, shoots well on spot ups, but those guys are very dependent on others to create threes for them. They really only have one guy who can make a three off the dribble or off a DHO. That, of course, is Kyrie. And so the problem, though, when you're trying to think of who they could acquire, is that you don't want them to lose their identity in terms of being able to switch, being the number one defense in the NBA. And so, you know, if they were to look for, say, a Lou Williams, who would fit into that disabled player exception, by the way, you're really compromising perhaps what has made them so good this season. And with the number of assets that they're willing to give up, which I'm guessing is not that many at this point in time, you're probably not going to get a guy who both has the size to fit into their switching scheme and it can really hit shots.
There might be one, and it's somebody that I hadn't seriously considered because I didn't think they were seriously on the block until this week, and that's Rodney Hood. So Rodney Hood is not a perfect player, but I think that the Celtics are a more natural fit. He shot 37% from three for his career. He's actually about 39% this year. And while he probably isn't a great fit for the starting lineup just because his consistency on both ends is there, but if he could play like 20 to 25 minutes a game as a second unit guy, I think he could be really destructive for them. And then the other benefit is something, I have a piece coming out about this for the Sporting News, is he could even fit in, assuming his market is tamped down by the restricted process, which it might be. He could become a form of a human trade exception, because Boston just needs salary ballast if they were ever going to make a big move, because right now all of their big salaries are tied up in guys that they really want to keep. And so I think Hood would be a great fit there, and they could get him, I think, without giving up their best assets. Maybe their own first in whatever year Utah wants, and then something else that's of value to them might be enough.
Yeah, you would think it probably would be this year's first, just to get the obligation out of the way and not hamstring themselves in future trading. Although they are not guaranteed necessarily to have another first this year, but they have all their own firsts going forward, so that would not necessarily be an issue. They also, of course, have that Lakings pick, which is one of the more valuable picks that is out there, maybe the most valuable pick that is out there, owed from another team at this point in the NBA, so with Brooklyn looking a little bit better this season. To remind you, as we always do ad nauseum, the Lakings pick, Boston gets it this year if it's 2-5 from the Lakers, or then it becomes the Kings pick next year, as long as it's not number one, in which case it would be the Sixers. I don't see any scenario at this deadline in which that would be on the table, though. Do you?
No, I don't think so. That's saved for the way I've been phrasing it is the next James Harden trade. So the next player who could become an MVP caliber guy.
Or just drafting a really good player. I mean, mean,
yeah.
You know, if that, you know, that's a top five pick this year, especially a top four pick. You know, there's a really good top four in this draft, it's looking like.
And it's projected right now, 538 has it, that the Lakers will finish with the sixth worst record. So then that would mean lottery night would be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I really would like to thank the Celtics for making these last few lotteries, like, incredibly entertaining. And this one even more so, for sure.
Well, so while we're talking about obligations in the future, we should also talk about the other two briefly. The other two first-round obligations that they have moving forward, these are more of trade assets rather than present things, because they have a lottery-protected first from the Clippers that for 19 and 20, and then it becomes a second. And then they have a top eight protected pick from Memphis in 2019, so not this year, that goes to top six and then unprotected. So both of those are, they're more distant assets, but they're still absolutely valuable, and it's a part of what gives Boston just so much ammunition if they want to do something or just draft good players moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and just in general, of the players who we're kind of thinking are just out there right now, I mean, I think they could also use a little bit more athleticism defensively at the rim at backups. I mean, I think Baines has exceeded expectations this year. I still wonder about his ability to play against some of their competition, especially against Cleveland. You know, I think he could be a decent matchup against Tristan Thompson. But other than that, I mean, I think that having a more mobile option at center other than Al Horford, it could be useful. You know, they have always never had any interest in Nerlens Noel. I don't think that that's something, that's a direction that they would necessarily want to go in. I mean, Tyreke Evans is a name that's going to come up, I'm sure. What do you think of that for them?
I think it helps. I mean, he has been shooting the ball well the last couple of years, so that part of it we talked about, that was important in playmaking. Then that allows them maybe to use Marcus Smart, depending on how they want to deploy him in the playoffs, against, you know, use him more as a matchup dependent guy just because he's so good defensively, and then you have another creator when Kyrie Irving is out of the game. So I wouldn't give up much in the way of assets to make it happen, just because it's a rental, and I think Boston's future is much brighter than their present, which is impressive considering their present is pretty damn bright.
Yeah.
So I would go in that direction. So for me, if I'm going to give up a real asset, it's going to be for a player who can be not only a part of this team, but part of it moving forward. Rodney Hood would be one. And then if they've identified a center who, whether they occupy the first team or the second team, just somebody who is cost controlled, who could be a part of their future, that would be a way to do it too. I'm not saying he's available, but somebody kind of with the salary structure of like Bam Adebayo, like that, where they have a couple more years of team control. That's if you're going to give up an asset for a center, that's what I would be looking for.
How big are their tax concerns for next year?
Well, so they're probably going to be in the tax next year, but I think ownership is willing to, my instinct is that they're willing to do that if the team is good enough, and it certainly looks like the team is going to be good enough.
Yeah.
So I think they'll mitigate it. Like, they don't just take on, you know, $10 million just because it looks like fun. But if it's a player that they think can help them win, I think they'd absolutely do it. And that's, you know, the players, and I've talked about the kind of the human trade exception I do with Rodney Hood. The other guy like that I've thrown out there, not perfect for their defensive stuff, is Julius Randle. Randle is the same situation where he's a restricted free agent, but
I think he actually is good for their defense. I think as to play that same role as he has in the Lakers, as like a switching center on the second unit and someone who can give them a little more scoring in the second unit, I actually think he would be an outstanding fit there. It's just a question of, you know, how much really do they want to give up to try and get him, I think.
Right, and how pragmatic are the Lakers, and how pragmatic are the Lakers right now, basically saying, you know, like, because they would not take on, I don't think, Jordan Clarkson to make that deal happen, because they don't really need Jordan Clarkson that much. So would they, basically, are they willing to give up another asset? And then it's kind of like the idea of, oh, $20, I wanted a peanut, and be like, $20 can buy many peanuts. You can use that asset, whatever Boston sends back, to then trade Jordan Clarkson, because we both think he's at least a slightly negative asset.
Yeah, more than slightly. In my case, I mean, when we were talking about him, I was saying he's, you know, a $4 or $5 million a year player. And he's making 12.5. But anyway, so I don't know. I'm it feels like it's going to be relatively quiet. I mean, your Hood idea is an interesting one, but again, and the idea of maybe getting some more talent here as well. Now, you know, they're already in a pickle as far as Marcus Smart's next contract. If they were to trade for a pending restricted free agent, probably either that free agent or Smart would have to go. You know, because I think they're willing to pay the tax. I don't think they're willing to go more than maybe like, you know, 10 or 15 million into the tax necessarily. I mean, that would be obviously a very expensive roster, and this is a team that still is going to have, you know, a bunch of rookie extensions coming up at some point. I think that they would be plenty happy to just use that Lakers pick if if that's what it is this year, or the Kings pick next year. The Kings certainly not exactly on track to look very good next year, so that should be pretty valuable no matter where it ends up happening. So I mean, and is there anyone that you think they could just look to trade Smart? Is there any chance of that with him about to be a pending free agent? I mean, he definitely, you know, he's part of their closing lineups. He's a valuable player for them. Also a guy maybe whose value declines in the playoffs, and because he doesn't get guarded. So maybe something like, you know, I mean, I don't think a swap of the pending restricted free agents Hood and Smart is necessarily realistic, but you know, maybe they could look to move on from him and just try to get something in. But also remember this, they tried to trade Marcus Smart last offseason and really just couldn't get much for him. And so that's part of why they ended up trading Avery Bradley.
They had also success with Marcus Smart. So it wasn't like, oh, look at this, they have so much more praise now that they've been this good defense. Nope, they were a good defense last year too. So that isn't, it's not like there's a new appreciation for what Marcus Smart is doing, though I think you can argue he's having a better year. So yeah, I think that's a limitation. What probably with Marcus Smart, what you do is you listen and you just hope that somebody overvalues him, but you don't expect it. So you talk to people in your normal course of business, and if somebody makes you an offer, that's worth it. But I don't think there's, like, knowing what I know right now, I don't think there's a clear trade to be had. So it's going to depend on whether another GM sees differently. And restricted free agents, I think, are a value proposition right now, because a lot of these guys are going to get underpaid because there's just so little money to go around. So there could be a team that just says, hey, he's a better defensive wing than the unrestricted free agents who are going to be available, especially the unrestricted free agents within our price range, whatever that is for that team.
Yeah, and I think more likely, if there is a move here, I don't think it's going to be a major one. I think they're going to save most of that disabled player exception to just have the most possible firepower. I think they would have more money than any other contender or pseudo contender due to that disabled player exception once the buyout market gets into full swing. So I think if we had to pick most likely player to be traded, just to wrap up here, who do you think it is on this team?
I think it's Smart, just because nobody else seems particularly likely to be traded.
Yeah, I could even see it being like Gershon Yabusele, just if they decided, hey, you know, we want to trade for Tyreke Evans. And Yabusele has shown very little so far this year. You know, maybe they still believe in him, but I'm not a huge believer in what he's bringing due to, go ahead.
I want to say one quick thing. Sorry about that. We just have to mention Justice Winslow as a possibility here, because Danny Ainge showed such an intense interest before. Whenever that happens, I always file it away, because if those players become available, the first place you think of is people that value them as draft prospects.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Although Winslow has looked a little bit better, I think, since he's come back from that injury from Miami. He's actually shooting the three ball with a little bit less hesitation than he had been, at least hitting a little from the corners. I'm sure I'll look at his stats, and I'm saying that just based on having watched a couple of their games. I'm sure I'll look at his stats since he came back from the injury, and he's like, you know, 2 out of 25. But nonetheless, I don't know if Winslow is necessarily going to get traded, especially because the Heat kind of need him right now, and they have been on fire lately after yet another miracle victory against Charlotte last night. All right, let's do a read here, and then we'll get to the New York Knicks. So Helix Sleep, longtime listeners are quite familiar with them. They've been a sponsor for over 2 years now, and the way they initially became a sponsor was my now fiance, then girlfriend, and I were looking for a mattress. We'd heard a lot about mattress delivery companies that are much less expensive than traditional mattresses, because they're able to cut out the overhead and just ship you a mattress, which you can unfold from a box. So we tried another mattress company, and they have just one size fits all, basically. And we're like, oh, I was a little skeptical of that, but we're like, all right, you know, it's supposed to be great. Like, all these good reasons to try it. Nah, it didn't work for us. Both of us started to suffer from some back pain, and that was the whole reason we were getting a new mattress to begin with, is because my old mattress, it was worn out. It was like 10 years old, and so we had to get a new one. So we returned that one size fits all mattress, and then my fiance found Helix Sleep, which is better because you fill out their 2 to 3 minute questionnaire, and you're getting a mattress that actually fits your sleep profile, whether it's how hot or cool you like to sleep, firmness, any of the factors that control how a mattress sleeps. You can put in your biometric data and your preference in terms of how hot or cold you'd like to sleep, and it'll spit out something for you. And if you and your significant other can't agree, they can even split it down the middle for you. We, of course, as a perfectly harmonic couple, did not need that, but it really has been the best mattress that I've ever slept on. We've had it for 2 years now. We actually just got another one for our guest room once we moved into this new place. Really just love the mattress. Couldn't recommend it more highly. The way to get started with them, helixsleep.com/capspace is that URL to get $50 off your custom-made mattress. Once again, Again, helixsleep.com/capspace. Easy to remember that URL since we talk about capspace all the time on the program. Helixsleep.com/capspace. Let them know that you came from us. So the Knicks, about $4 million or so over the cap. That gives them $16 million in maneuvering room under the tax. They still have a $2.4 million trade exception for having sent out more money in the Carmelo Anthony trade than they received back. No open roster slots, although I'm certain Danny will have a snarky comment about how easily they could create one. And actually, one thing that we didn't talk about too with the Knicks is they moved on from Ramon Sessions and signed Trey Burke instead out of their Westchester affiliate. Not a ton of cap space going into next year, basically nothing. But what do you think their motivations are here coming up on the deadline?
I think they're getting closer to understanding that they're not going to be a playoff team this year, so they can look a little bit towards the future. And for me, the biggest thing that the Knicks need to do is they need to move on from at least one of their centers, because they have this logjam, and it's a strange one because all of the players are in different circumstances. So Kylo Quinn has a player option for next year, about $4.2 million, which I think he'll decline, but it's not entirely clear. Kanter has an $18.6 million player option, which he will pick up in all likelihood. And then Willie Hernan Gomez, who was, I think it was first team all rookie last year. I thought he played well. He has three more years of team control, though that last year could be like the Chandler Parsons thing where they decline it and then pay him as a restricted free agent if they really like him. But so you have all those guys. It's just too much value tied up in that, especially if for people like us who think that Kristaps Porzingis should play at least some minutes at center. And you can move any of them, but they should move some of them.
Well, and then of course Joakim Noah as well.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Larger elephant in the room as basically their highest paid player going forward, making essentially $18 million and then up to $19 million over through the 2019-20 season. I mean, I think we need to at least discuss the possibility of Kemba Walker going there, though. And as I tweeted over the weekend at Nate Duncan NBA, if by some reason you don't follow me, the pursuit of Walker is really complicated by the fact that I'm not sure that even getting him gets them back into the playoff race. I mean, they have a very road heavy schedule, which they are suffering through right now. Much of this nice record that they had early in the year was created because Porzingis was playing so well. Since he had that ugly ankle injury against Brooklyn that he came back from pretty quickly, it seems like he has not quite been the same. Not sure whether the injury or just what seems to always be his regression after the first month and a half of the season comes into play there, or the nagging injuries or what. But, you know, I think Walker, obviously, you know, the Knicks, despite the potential of Ntilikina, have perhaps the most limited point guards in the league. And so that could be an enormous upgrade. But considering they're already five games below 500 and tough schedule the rest of the way, I'm not sure that Walker, you know, gets them back into playoff contention. And then the reason that's important is because, all right, now you're trading for basically 1 year of Kemba Walker next year when it's actually going to matter. All he does this year potentially is just hurt your draft pick. And this is a team that continues to need more of a youth infusion in the draft.
A couple other things that we didn't really talk about in the Kemba Walker thing when we talked about before that are important. One, he is from New York. He was born in the Bronx,
sure,
went to high school in Harlem, and has a connection with the area. And the other thing you get if you trade for Kemba Walker is his full bird rights. And the Knicks, one of their books are very strangely structured because of the money they spent on Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee, that they don't really have a time where they're ever clearing their books. They could do it through the stretch provision and dumping contracts and things like that. But so if you get Kemba, the idea basically is that you're going to function as an over the cap team. And the Knicks have no problem doing that. They've done it for a long time. And, you know, with some spurts, fits and starts in between, like when they signed Amari. And I think that they can do that. I think that works in well. And you talked about worsening the first round pick. I assume their first round pick would be a part of a Kemba Walker trade. So I'm not particularly worried about that for this year. And what he does is
So you don't think that Ntilikina, now
that's the part that's
well this is what we need to talk about, because Charlotte, what it's their stated desire, at least per Woj's piece, is salary relief and then assets as well. But I think it seems realistic that if you want salary relief, you're not getting back nearly as many assets. Now, what is that salary relief for Charlotte? Tough to say, because with the Knicks, at least, they don't have expiring contracts for this year. Now, maybe you could throw, you know, Enes Kanter in and take back a Marvin Williams, and that gives you an extra year of salary relief, and you know, maybe they could get Jeremy Lamb. I mean, there's some ways they could get it, but the Knicks cannot provide any salary relief, at least for this upcoming offseason. And certainly Michael Jordan, if he's going to move on from Walker, I'm sure he's thinking is like, you know, I would like to cut a bunch of salary for next year. If we're going to suck and nobody's going to come and watch our team, we can't be, you know, this team that's paying almost $20 million in salary over the cap. You know, I mean, it's not to mention even being close to the tax. So, you know, Nick Batum is someone that the Hornets may look to move as well. You know, he's not particularly desirable, but a guy that the Knicks could use. And a Walker trade, you know, I like it. It would make the Knicks more watchable. I'd love to see what a good pick and roll point guard could do with Porzingis. But you also just wonder, like, you're probably limiting your long-term ceiling by going for Walker, who will be 29 in the 2019 offseason. You mentioned they'll have full bird rights on him, but, you know, how long is he going to continue to be a very solid player beyond 29 as a short point guard? So, I mean, now the Knicks have already limited their ceiling with Kristaps anyway. I think with the signings of Hardaway and Noah, and to a lesser extent Lee, who's actually been productive for them, but they basically have limited their ceiling with Kristaps. So I don't think the opportunity cost is that high, because if they don't get Walker, where are they really going with this team and the limited flexibility they have? And then even, you know, if you get into 2019-20, then Porzingis will be on his max deal, presumably. And so that means that they're not going to have any flexibility then either. It's really, I mean, I think I probably would, the more I think about it, I think, you know, I'd look into it and try, you know, I think even if they get Walker, though, we're looking at it still just back to a lower end playoff team in the East.
It also ties in with the idea of whether they could go that way or do a pivot with Courtney Lee, because Courtney Lee is a good basketball player, and I think his contract is fine. I don't think it's great or anything, but he would provide a lot more.
2 years left for Lee at about $12 million per.
Right, and I think he would provide more value to somebody else who's just kind of in a different place, especially if they want to give more time to Tim Hardaway. And so it's like, well, okay, you can either go more the win now direction with Kemba Walker, and then Courtney Lee is immediately more valuable because he can be a part of that team. He's also played with Kemba Walker before, which has some value. Or you can try to move him somewhere else, kind of do that pivot. I think the win now option, just it's not necessarily what you and I would do if we were running Knicks, but we aren't running the Knicks and we haven't for a while. So I think that's why we shouldn't discount that possibility. And yeah, I'm working
and
on
both Steve Mills and Scott Perry have histories of doing the win now move.
Right. And so I think that the other, like, so if you add Batum in, I think this brings a fascinating element to it, because the other thing that the Knicks need in the immediate, like if you're to say, hey, how can we be way better next year, is another capable forward. And Batum is probably, I think he's definitely not as good as we hoped he would be when he signed that huge contract in 2016, but he could be about at the right slot on the Knicks, just because if they have Kemba and Porzingis as offensive options, and then they have a bunch of other guys that are capable defenders, maybe not top end defenders, I think they slot in as like a, you know, not a top end playoff team. Like, you have that top three right now in the East, but below them, it's pretty much just a chunk of teams, and they could fit in with that, I think.
So, I mean, the deal, I mean, we don't want to spoil the mock trade deadline too much here, because certainly offers will be made during the mock trade deadline. But, you know, I think if you're going to make that kind of a deal, you're going to make it a lot bigger. You've got probably, you know, $37 million or so in combined salary that you're going to have to match. Now, surely Charlotte would be happy to take back the absolute minimum that they could. So, you know, who's involved in that deal? Kanter is probably got to be in there. You would think that maybe Ron Baker would be in that deal. O'Quinn. That gets you up to about $26 million in salary. Now you're getting pretty close. You got to get to 80% of $37 million. And then, you know, maybe it would be Ntilikina who would be the last asset going back, or it would be future first rounders. I'm sure that New York would fight for it to be future first rounders rather than Ntilikina, because I don't think their future first rounders, once they get Walker, are going to be as good as number eight. But I mean, if it came down to it and they said, hey, you know what? Like, it was that construct, Ntilikina, O'Quinn, Baker, Kanter, for Batum and Walker, would you do that as the Knicks?
I think I would.
And I agree with you, and I think the reason for that is that I just don't see superstar upside with Ntilikina. If Ntilikina were Dennis Smith, and it's quite possible that Ntilikina becomes a better player than Dennis Smith, but Smith has the upside offensively that Ntilikina doesn't. And Smith's actually pretty good lately, too.
And a superstar defensively versus a superstar offensively at the point guard position are two very different things. And Frank can be a wonderful player, but that's, you know, that's not as valuable.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. right. Doug McDermott, another guy who's a restricted free agent coming up. You know, he's someone that they could look to move as well for salary balance. But I actually, you know, I think that one is not bad for both teams, to be honest. I mean, Charlotte certainly is going to be my, I mean, at least they can kind of try to market Neal Aquina to some degree, a former lottery pick point guard, you know, because Charlotte, I mean, it's just going to need something at the point. And then they certainly would be set up to really nosedive. Maybe they could buy out Cantor at that point as well. They could use a backup. So, I mean, I'm sure Charlotte would like to get off of Dwight Howard as well, but, you know, maybe they could buy out Howard. They could buy out Cantor. I mean, there'd be options galore for them to save Michael Jordan some money and get cheap because no one's going to go watch that team anyway. There has been a lot of backlash out of the Charlotte market about trading Kemba and just, you know, why would they do this? No one's going to go watch this team. But, you know, it's an easy trope. I still think, like, guess what? Like, they're not going to be good the next few years, no matter what they do at this point. So no one's going to watch the team regardless. You might as well just rebuild and try to actually create sustainable success.
One other quick thing we should mention is the Knicks have all their own firsts, but they owe all their own seconds through 2020 run. But then the big one they got is actually Chicago's 2018 second. That was originally in the Cameron Payne trade and then in the Melo trade. So they have that. That's a pretty nice little second round asset, and depending on what they want to do here.
Yeah, and I think certainly for, you know, a Walker trade, I mean, we've spent a lot of time in this, obviously. There's other stuff they're going to do, but we're kind of out of time on them now. You know, Hernan Gomez could be a sweetener there. Maybe McDermott if they like them. You know, certainly Michael Jordan is totally enamored of American white guys, so McDermott could perhaps grease the skids a little bit. All right, most likely to be traded on this team.
Kyle O'Quinn, expiring contract, functionally speaking, superfluous but useful for them, so they could move him to someone else.
I'm going to say Mike Beasley.
Interesting.
Who has actually played well this year. I think he, and we'll see, you know, the Knicks are one of these teams where let's see, like, just their results over the next 2 weeks is actually, I think, going to determine a lot of their direction. If they somehow stay in things, that might change things.
I'm a little surprised neither of us said Willie Hernan Gomez.
Yeah. I mean, that's a thought, but I'm trading Hernan Gomez, unless it's in a Walker trade, I mean, that would be a win now move, right? You trade young for old, right? So, I don't think it will be Hernan Gomez. I think they still believe in him. It's just, you know, he's been outplayed. And I think he's going to get a lot more playing time. And I agree with you. I mean, O'Quinn certainly would be my number two pick and could be the guy most likely to be moved in part to open up some time for Hernan Gomez. All right, Sixers. I think what strikes me the most about where they are right now is that I think it's still really all about this upcoming summer for them. And that's going to very much limit what they can do. They do have their room exception still. They also don't have a ton of open roster spots. They have one, I guess. So they're going to really try to increase their cap space, get to max cap space for this off season. And that's really, I think, going to control what they're trying to do more than any team needs for this season.
What's hard about talking about the Sixers trade deadline is that the most interesting thing is something that we might not know at all, which is how zealously they try to move Jared Bayless right now, because Bayless is getting paid $8.6 million next year. It's the easiest money for them to clear, depending on who is available, who says yes to them. They could do that through the stretch provision, but that puts more money on the book. So if they could do something to unload that now, then you don't have to do it later, which would be good for them. But they didn't use that. They didn't use an asset to do that in the Jahlil Okafor Nick Stauskas trade. That would have been an opportunity to do it with where Brooklyn is. They would now, like, because that'd probably be the primary thing going back, because they don't really want to trade their expiring money, though they could. So I want to watch that, but we might just be sitting there just hoping to get a little morsel from some front office person telling us, because if they don't make a move, we're not going to hear much.
Yeah, I think that's right. Bayless, the question of how much it would cost to move him. Also, they actually need him right now, especially, you know, with Redick been a little injury prone. He was starting for them. And obviously they probably think more of him than we do, because they signed him to that ridiculous contract to begin with, 3 years, $27 million. So he's got $9 million for next season. Actually, I think it declined slightly down to 8.5, which at least showed some foresight there. But so they could stretch that and open up a little bit more than $6 million in room. As it stands right now with Bayless on the books, and we're projecting them to lose their pick or lose that Lakers pick now, so that will not be on the books. If it's below five or if it's number one, they will keep it. And then they'll have their own first, they're looking about $27 million in space right now. They move on from Bayless, they can get up to the 30% max for guys with 7 to 9 years of experience. If they want to get in the LeBron James Derby, they certainly have smaller contracts that they could find a way to move on from, for sure. And they could get, if they just move Bayless completely, they can get into the James Derby. So I don't think a first rounder and getting rid of Bayless, it makes a ton of sense. Again, this is a young team, and a young team that we still don't really know exactly what they need in the long term with the question marks around Markelle Fultz right now. So I think moving Bayless for a second rounder, I think they would do that. For a first, I don't think that they would, even if they get some production coming back.
Two things to note there. One, they actually have a nice little cadre of second round picks. They have seven extra second round picks in the next three drafts. Yeah. Four
so maybe
drafts.
They just throw in two of those to try to move Bayless. And then it becomes a question of which it is. But.
Yeah, or they throw in, they have some interesting young guys, Justin Anderson, Korkmaz, who's hurt right now with that Liz Frank injury, TLC, who I think is a little bit probably better than you'd want to throw into that trade. You could maybe do one of those guys in a second or two, some just kind of, how much sweetener do you need to get rid of this? And then the other part of that is, why I think it's smarter to do now rather than later, is just there are so few teams that are going to have space that they're going to be wielding a lot of power, and the Sixers, if they need to move him then, they will be under the gun. There just won't be much time to make that move happen, so I think they might have to give up more. So it's if their confidence, and there's so many guys at that kind of tier, you know, like the Avery Bradley, Danny Green type of thing, much less like Paul George or LeBron, that they're probably going to get somebody. And if they clear him, maybe there's an outside shot they can keep JJ Redick, which I'm sure they'd love to do.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. If they were going to bring back Redick, of course they'd have to renounce his bird rights, which don't do them any good anyway. He's making already $23 million this year, but they would want to re-sign him, or at least have an agreement for him with you'd think a longer term deal for less money, to be sure. Just in terms of this year though, you know, again, they do have that treasure trove of second rounders. I think they would like to solidify their position in the playoffs, get these young guys some experience, continue to build the excitement in the market. And I think if they can use just their second rounders to do that, they might. If they wanted to go in that direction, who strikes you as let's say what are their needs first, and then we can talk about what the target would be.
Especially if Redick is limited, but really either way, they need more shooting.
Yes.
A guy who desperately. Can just, and they don't need shot creation, so it can just be a catch and shoot type of guy. That can really work. Well, it's probably going to be their free agent target.
I'm not
target.
Sure about them not needing shot creation.
It depends on
folks. They don't have anybody on this team who can run a conventional pick and roll and actually be a threat to shoot the ball.
I think that at this point, you don't want to commit a ton of resources, but you're right. If you threw a small asset at it, and for this season, like Tyreke Evans on an expiring contract, yeah, that could make some sense. And long term, I think you want a high end guard defender that could really just take this defense to another level. But I don't think you acquire that guy right now. That could be your target in free agency.
Yeah, that's a possibility, I think. And finding matching salary for them is difficult.
Yeah. Too. Oh, but also, how are you feeling about them at backup center right now? It's also an option for one of their draft picks, whether it's their own or something.
Well, actually,
you know what?
No, it's not hard to find matching salary. They could use Amir Johnson for if they wanted to. But I know they think that he's, again, another guy they think is probably better than he actually is, but he's been in their rotation, obviously.
But that ties in with my backup center thing. So I think this would actually be an interesting time to kind of strike if there's a guy that the Colangelos find compelling as a long-term option, because Rashawn Holmes is fine, but I don't think he's the answer there. So giving that up for whatever that is could be worthwhile.
Bring back Nerlens. He had the best season of his career in Philly.
Or like they could take a flyer on Hernan Gomez if the Knicks just decided he was the odd man out.
Who would really help them, I think, would be Channing Frye.
Ooh.
I think he would be a wonderful fit if they wanted to invert the offense with guys like Šarić and Simmons to get his shooting out there as well. But, the problem is the Cavs are going to be looking to just move him and not take any salary back due to tax concerns. And I'm not sure that Philly can really offer much there.
Yeah. And the problem is Philly can't take back long-term salary because they could they could move Amir Johnson to a third team and then take on something from that team. But they don't want, nobody wants the other part of that. So
yeah, old friend Ersan Ilyasova would be someone on an expiring contract, about $6 million in Atlanta. He would have to assent to any trade, of course. I think that's one that really sticks out to me. I mean, it seems so easy, but Ilyasova played well for them last year. They could really use again some kind of a stretch four option. I think Trevor Booker really has not worked out at all. Big surprise, we told you that was going to happen. To the extent of him trying to play together with another one of their traditional bigs, and they're just so limited in terms of the shooting on this team. The idea has been floated maybe of them trying to go after one of the restricted free agent guys, but that really is going to, with, you know, that guy's cap hold is going to be at least $10 million. That's going to eat into their space too much. So I don't think the idea of them acquiring a restricted free agent does a ton. Maybe a Derek Favors would be someone that they could potentially look at, but Favors isn't probably going to stay there afterwards. So, but you know, if it's Favors for Amir Johnson, Favors could help them this year, and you know, maybe the Jazz pick up a second rounder or two in that transaction. But you really, I think the Jazz can do better for Favors, or there might be a team interested in him that wants to re-sign him, which I don't think Philly necessarily would. So yeah, I foresee a quiet deadline. Another team that could get in the buyout market, though, since they still have their full room exception over $4 million available, although that begins to prorate down on January 15th, but they still, you know, in terms of competing, I mean, they could, by even March 1st, they could offer about $3 million there to someone. So that's not bad for, you know, a month and a half of work plus the playoff.
Yeah, I could see them as being, but yeah, we don't know what the buyout market is going to be. And also that ties in with the idea of how do they envision their backup center? Because they could even trade Amir Johnson and or Rashawn Holmes and then just not get a center back and sign somebody. I mean, they would, backup center minutes for them would be pretty interesting.
There will be some centers on the buyout market. I can assure you of that. All right, most likely to be traded, Bayless?
Yeah, because I can't identify which of their young players would be the most likely sweetener, so Bayless.
All right, before we get to Toronto, this from Indochino. Indochino is the largest custom apparel company. The largest. That's it. They're the biggest one. But fortunately, they don't make the biggest suits unless that's what you need. I always used to have suits that were way too big. I'd try to get something off the rack, but I have big shoulders and not that big of a chest. And so when I would get something like that, it was just like a tent on me. You know, you could like pull out the front of it where you button it, and there was like a foot of space when you pulled it out. And they'd say, oh, don't worry about that. We'll fix that. We'll tailor it for you. That'll be 3 weeks at the department store. Okay, that's fine. You know, now give us your $1,000. Come back in 3 weeks. Still doesn't really fit that well. Certainly not compared to my Indochino suits. And when you consider that you can now get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 with that familiar cap space code at Indochino.com, it's just so much better of a value. My Indochino suits are my favorite. They fit right. That's the important thing. And they fit in my shoulders. I can actually move around a little bit. And yet it's not just this enormous tent on me. The pants was always a huge problem too, because off the rack suits, for whatever reason, to have pants that fit my 36 inch inseam, it would be like a 42 waist. And so you have to like cinch it in, but then it would kind of billow out after they cinched it in at the waist. No, just get it custom made. There's no reason not to. Pick your fabric, choose your customizations, single breasted, double breasted, pick the liner, monogram, how wide you want the lapels. You personalize every single detail of it. You can either shop online at Indochino.com, visit one of their North American showrooms. I think they're up to 9 now in a lot of major cities. I got my measurements done in San Francisco, or they have a tutorial on how to measure yourself as well. So once again, the way to get started with them, Indochino.com. Use that promo code CAPSPACE. Easy to remember. We talk about it all the time with the program here. To get any premium suit for just $359 plus shipping, use that CAPSPACE code and let them know that you came from us. So like we talked about with Philly being limited by their 2018 aspirations, summer 2018 aspirations, the Raptors are limited by their tax situation.
They're about $2 million below the tax line. They do have an open roster spot, and they have some trade exceptions in the biannual, but they not only are kind of compressed with that limited flexibility this year, but that ties in with next year, where next year I have them at about $3 million over the tax without their restricted free agents, and that's Bebe, Bruno Caboclo, and Fred VanVleet, the last of which is by far the most likely that they would re-sign. And that means that they would probably like to unload a little bit of long-term money, but now is probably the wrong time to do it, because their long-term money is in players that are contributing to their team now, and they have lofty aspirations now.
Yeah, their long-term money is their starting center, Jonas Valanciunas, making 15 this year, up to 16.5 next year, and then a player option for 17.6 million. Well, which, you know, I think he might exercise that. But certainly their long-term books work a lot better if he's not around. I think there's a very good argument that in a lot of situations, in a lot of matchups, including against their chief competition in the Eastern Conference, Jakob Poeltl is a much better matchup there, and Serge Ibaka at center is a much better matchup there. But I don't think, as you said, that this is necessarily the time to move Valanciunas. Also worth noting that they've already given up their 2018 first round pick, lottery protected, to dump salary already in the Damari Carroll deal. And so there is some talk that they'd be willing to pay the tax when needed, but their ownership has not been willing to do that yet. I do think that they're good enough that maybe paying the tax this year could be worthwhile, and it's not like they can't get out of it in future years with a Valanciunas move, perhaps, and they wouldn't be that much over. So taking on some salary, or at least, you know, their BAE, they're probably getting down to the point that's $3.3 million this year, where they could use most of that on the buyout market and still not quite be into the tax. They are going to really need to re-sign Van Vliet, though, next offseason. Noguera and Caboclo obviously are almost certainly to be gone unless they re-sign for extremely cheap. But just in general, what does this team need if we are hoping that they can compete in the East? They do have a lot of depth, so there's not a ton that jumps out at you right now.
Their biggest need is to make sure that they have a forward that they trust in that last spot when they're playing Ibaka at center. So I think we can pencil in, obviously, Lowry, DeRozan, Ibaka in that lineup. OG Anunoby's getting close just because he's done a nice job defending the big wings in the league. LeBron, Giannis, yeah. KD.
His shooting has troublesomely dropped off lately.
Absolutely.
Though, at least in the games that I've seen. I haven't checked the numbers in the last 2 or 3 weeks, but the jumper has not looked good. He's kind of short-arming it. Even as he's gotten more aggressive shooting it, it's been very odd. But, you know, still a guy who, I mean, I think he can still hit from the corners. You have to guard him and provides a lot of size. And they've got other options there, too, if they want to go a little bit smaller against some of these teams.
CJ Miles is the guy that Sirit Sohi and I talked about on the most recent Real GM Radio is the guy that they have. But that, if I were to throw resources at something, it would probably be that. The problem is there aren't many of those guys. Like, there's a reason why they paid CJ Miles $8 million a year for 3 years. It's because there aren't many, and he's even kind of a different thing. So that's what you're looking for. It's very hard to get. They have a better chance of kind of cultivating that guy with future resources through, you know, their development or something else like that. And one other smaller move that they could consider is whether they can basically pay a team to take on somebody like Bruno Caboclo, basically just pay his salary and then have that money available to spend a little bit more on a buyout guy. I think that would be a worthwhile proposition for them. And they could make that kind of like a fallback for some of these teams with cap space if they're just going to let it go to waste. So it doesn't really help them, but it doesn't really hurt them either.
Yeah, we'll see whether teams are going to just take guys on for only cash. I think some of those kind of asset would have to be involved there. This is a team that their second rounders are maybe not going to be as valuable. Toronto has all of their cash, their $5.1 million remaining, if they should need that. The one guy who I think might be available on the trade market that would help this team would be James Ennis. I think he's could maybe give them a little bit better option than OG, or maybe even play together with him in some lineups if they wanted to go with DeRozan, Lowry, Ennis, OG, and Ibaka. I think that could be a very versatile lineup that they might look at. He would be the guy that I might try to target. What asset they would give up for him, I'm not sure how much Memphis values his early bird rights. He's making only about $3 million this season. I'm not sure. But of all the people on the trade market, I mean, their depth is so good that there aren't really many players that realistically would be available that I really see as a worthwhile upgrade for them. So Ennis is the only guy that I've identified that I think really would help that much.
Yeah, I mean, you could conceive of a way that like Wilson Chandler would help them, but the problem is his money for next year and his money for this year makes it hard to really to put a swap together because they just don't have filler salary either. Like the potential issues. I mean, because Valanciunas, you know, you could call him filler salary, except that he makes $17 million for another 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, it is. I mean, they don't really have bad salary on this team,
right,
other than maybe Valanciunas you could look at. But he's still at least productive. He's a player who starts and is okay for them. So yeah, I don't really have a ton more to say on these guys. I don't expect a particularly splashy deadline. line from them. And, you know, obviously they were very active last year in getting Ibaka. But with the tax limitation now, maybe I'm wrong about them wanting to go into the tax, but I think they can pretty easily avoid it. I'm just not sure who's out there that's enough of an upgrade to really bother with this. And especially because they're already out that 2018 first round pick. And you look at how well Ujiri has been able to do with picks in that range. I think they would be especially loath to give those up for the limited upgrades who are available. And then you throw in the tax as well. I really don't necessarily see it happening. Can always be wrong, obviously, but a big move does not, even one that's just to add a rotation player, does not really seem to be in the offing right now.
I'd agree with that. I'll say my most likely player to be traded is Bebe, because he's a better version of the Bruno Caboclo trade that I said. And there absolutely could be teams that say, hey, let's take the restricted rights on him and roll the dice. And so there's a possibility the Raptors wouldn't trade him because that's not enough for him. But I think that's a worthwhile thing if they can get a better guy with that last roster spot.
Yeah, and I'd say I would echo that. Caboclo is up there too, just in the money-saving sort of deal that you had discussed. Okay, Brooklyn.
This will probably be even faster than the last couple because they, like the Raptors, because it was in the same move, they made their big moves already. They got Damari Carroll, so that tied up a lot of their cap space, which they got a first-round pick for. Then on top of that, they traded Trevor Booker for Jahlil Okafor and Nick Stauskas. So my expectation is that they have this $3.7 million in cap room that they could use. However, they do not have an open roster spot at the moment. And then they have $15 million in space next year, assuming Lin opts in. So they could do something small. I do not expect them to do something big because they've already made the moves that you would say probably preclude the other stuff.
Yeah. And they've got a lot of bad salary that they've essentially already absorbed. Certainly Mozgov falls into that category. Jeremy Lin certainly would have been someone we'd be talking about had he not ruptured his patellar tendon, I think on opening night it was, against the Pacers. And then he's still got a player option for next year. So unlikely, I think, that he would get moved. You know, they do have Spencer Dinwiddie. Maybe the thought would be considering selling high on him. Maybe the thought would be that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is someone that could help a contender a little bit more. I mean, I think I might listen on those guys at least. Part of my motivation with them to some degree would be, well, I want to make sure we're not too good next year because we'll finally, after all this pain, which really hasn't been that long. It's really only their third year when they've been bad. You know, I mean, remember they made the playoffs in 2015, amazingly, before, you know, it just so happened to coincide that these 3 years of the Celtics having their pick were their really bad 3 years. So maybe you might look to move Dinwiddie, you know, just because, but that's also a move they could make in the offseason as well. And we'll see with D'Angelo Russell going to be back for the rest of the year too, what the dynamic is between Russell and Dinwiddie. So yeah, like you, I don't expect them to do much. They have that $3.7 million in space. You could imagine them just taking on, you know, someone along the lines of a Caboclo or someone along the lines of maybe a Nick Young from the Warriors, although I don't think the Warriors will move him, as we talked about the other day. I would consider it or just another tax team. They could be the Noah Vonleh destination, although I think they just cannot quite fit him in to their available cap space. In fact, yes, they can fit him in. Actually, he makes 3.5 and they have 3.7 available. So with the Blazers trying to get under the tax, as we'll talk about later on here, that's another possible target for them. But those sorts of moves, I think, will be just, you know, maybe they pick up a second and take on that type of money from a tax team. That's all I expect from them at this point.
One thing I wanted to float by you is, so Tyler Zeller is making his minimum this season and then has or actually might be a little bit above that. He's making the minimum next year, non-guaranteed. Do you think that you wouldn't get much for him, but do you think there's maybe a market for that just by saying, hey, you know, you can get this guy and make a decision on him?
Not if I were the GM of a team, but maybe some teams that might like him. Another actually interesting thing here about them, you know, they've got Damari Carroll. Maybe they could say, you know, there's a team that likes enough of what they've seen from Carroll and has worse salary that they'd be willing to trade out, and the Nets could take on maybe another first round pick for a guy who goes a year later, you know, one of these terrible 2016 contracts. And what would you think of like Damari Carroll for Evan Turner? Like you've got another year or so of money. Carroll's a better player, I think, than Turner, although I don't know if the Blazers would be willing to admit that. this is just an example, obviously. Turner can still play a little bit. You know, he might help them with some creation. They're a team that plays with a lot of spacing, so it would be a good fit for Turner. And then Carroll could give Portland some of that shooting on the wing that they need, a stretch four option, you know, and pick up a first-round pick from the Blazers in that deal.
I like it, but I also think there might be a better opportunity for that moving forward. I think that you listen on those offers, and if somebody surprises you with something stronger than expected, but because of the element of it, that you're adding a little bit of value for this year for the playoffs and things like that, but next year teams are going to start looking into their future a little bit more. I think teams aren't scared enough about 2019-20 right now. They're not as scared as they should be, and when that's true, then you want to wait to make moves, because you want, when you're using leverage, you want teams to be scared.
What does that mean, you're scared of 2019-20?
Basically, like
tax issues?
I think the cap isn't going to jump as much as people think it is, and so teams are looking at their books now, and they see, like, I think it's like the current estimates are that it's going to be a $7 million jump, and so that means a jump in the cap, that means a jump in the luxury tax, and if that goes away, then all of a sudden, like, these teams are going, okay, no, I was right around the tax too, oh no, now I'm $5 million over the tax, and everything that happens moving forward. And so when you want to exert leverage, I think that there, like, any assumptions that are made on that, and there's very little money that's coming off the books in 2019. It's mostly 2020 stuff. So I think that teams are going to eventually realize they're going to realize that they're not going to have the money they want to do to make the changes. So then that year could be valuable. It's just it's a little idea that's been rolling around in my head for the last like 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, if I were the Nets, I would still be looking to take on maybe one more bad contract and with one of their and get rid of one of their guys who can play a little bit too. You know, they are going to have about $12 million in cap space this offseason, and that could go somewhere, but again, I think it doesn't make sense to finally get good just as you have your draft pick again, because now you're really mired in purgatory. So I think continuing to play, you know, take on bad long-term money, they don't have much in the way of expiring contracts. I don't believe that, what was the date of the Stauskas Okafor trade?
I actually, from off the top of my head, believe that it was done at exactly the day before they could be at that allows them to be aggregated on deadline day. I think that's what happened, but I'm not 100%
okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So those two expiring contracts, maybe, you know, if you put them together, you've got $9 million. You know, maybe that could take clear off some money just in the long term. But I still think I would be trying, if I were the Nets, to pick up more assets for one of these teams that, you know, has one of these just miserable 2017 or summer 2016 contracts still on the books. And if you have a Carroll as a guy who can play a little bit that you can send back, that kind of makes some sense there. I mean, even Alan Crabb could fall into that category a little bit as well, though they seem to really like him for some reason. All right, I think that's all I have on them, though. Most likely to be traded,
I'm going to go with Dinwiddie, just because there's a theory of it that it's selling high and going with it more so than Carroll, because that just requires a different vision. They certainly could have it, but with Dinwiddie, it could just be an asset maximization standpoint, because, hey, this guy's going to get paid at some point. We have him. We like him. But also, his value is going to get minimized to them, because when D'Angelo Russell, who just came back, when D'Angelo Russell is playing full-time, it seems like he'll lose some steam. And then, obviously, if they keep him through the offseason, then Jeremy Lin will be back, and it's going to be harder to trade Lin than Dinwiddie.
I'll go with Carroll, I think, but Dinwiddie is an interesting one. I mean, he's non-guaranteed for next year at only the minimum, essentially. I'm sorry, that's $250,000 guaranteed for next year, but obviously the Nets will pick that up at this point with the way he's played. But I think both on the theory of getting something for him and just not being too good next year, he's actually been one of the better players in the NBA by RPM, in part due to the fact that he's played opposite D'Angelo Russell, who has not been good in that category, especially defensively. But nonetheless, I don't anticipate them getting rid of someone who's such a feel-good story. So I think I would go with Carroll, and I'm not sure what the market would be for Dinwiddie either. So Carroll would be my pick, but you're right that Dinwiddie, especially once Russell comes back, he's never going to be worth more than he is right now. Let's turn out of the Northwest Division and the Portland Trailblazers, a team that did a fair amount of its work as far as getting under the tax was concerned this offseason, trading away Alan Crabb. They got back Andrew Nicholson in this deal, stretched him, but still remained $2.9 million over the tax line. They still have their full MLE should they choose to use it, but that's obviously only on free agents. And they have an open roster spot. What is their 2018 summer looking like?
So they still have to pay Yusuf Nurkic, and we don't know exactly what the market is going to bear with him. But my assumption, especially with all the dead money that they have on their books, is that they'll be over the line in 2018-19, which is another part of the reason reason why getting under this year would be good for them, because A, they get that money, and B, it pushes back the idea of being a repeater and all that stuff by another year, but their owner is billionaire Paul Allen, and he might not care.
Yeah, you get the feeling that even he might care when it's just, you know, what's been a relatively mediocre, you know, bottom half of the Western Conference type of team, or bottom half of the Western Conference playoff picture type of team. But let's talk first about where they're going to be in terms of the tax. If they do try to get under, you have to imagine that Noah Vonleh conveniently makes $3.5 million. As you mentioned, they're $2.9 million over the tax. So if they can trade him into someone's space, you would imagine that they would do so. Where are they in terms of cash right now? They haven't used any, right?
They have not. So yeah, they could even throw that in if they want to pay the salary. And if they don't want to use an asset to give up Vonleh, you know, somebody might even just want to take him on because the other value you get is restricted, right? So I think they should be clean there.
All right. So you don't believe it'll take
I think it might.
It'll take some kind of an asset. Where are they in terms of their seconds? They're already out a couple of seconds in the future.
Yeah, they're out. So they have all their own firsts. They are out their 18 and 19 seconds, but they have the Lakers 2019, which I don't think is, I think that's probably too much in this, though. Of course, we don't know. The Lakers 2019 second could be garbage if they end up having a successful free agency.
Yeah, and really, other than Vonleh, Ed Davis, another guy they might look to move, but they are still in the playoff picture, and Davis is a big part of their rotation. He's their first center off the bench. He's been playing together with Zach Collins lately. Shabazz Napier is a guy who's been useful to them. They might even try to re-sign him in restricted free agency. Pat Connaughton, he's been in the rotation as well. He's also will be a restricted free agent this summer. So they are going to have to pay even some of their cheap contributors. What about the possibility of maybe getting off even more money than simply Vonleh? They've got Myers Leonard, who's just essentially $10 million in dead money, not even in the rotation right now on that four-year, $40 million deal that he signed. Mo Harkless, who has been on the fringes of their rotation lately, been way off from three-point range. Although Harkless will likely not make that 35% bonus clause, so that'll reduce his salary a little bit, might give him a little more breathing room under the tax. And so do you think there's any chance they can move any of those guys, or is it going to be a summer thing, you think?
I think if it's more of a summer thing, just because, not because of them, but because of the other teams not being willing to sell their space right now, and especially with Harkless, Leonard, and Turner, all of those guys expire in 2020, so you're asking them to know where they're going in the future, so that takes out teams like the Suns. I would say they're going to be optimistic, and even the Nets, while I think the Nets should be selling their 2018-19 space, going 2 years into the future without giving up a serious asset is limiting. And for Portland, Myers Leonard would save them money, but there are other ways to get under the tax, so you might as well save more money, or save less money and give up a lesser asset next year than do it right now. There isn't a reason to rush it if they're willing to give up Vonleh. And one other thing I wanted to bring up is you talked about the cash on hand, and I think that's important with them, because if they don't feel that, let's say Jake Layman is a member of their future because he has a non-guarantee for next year, they should also try to move him and clear that extra roster spot and a little bit more money, and then bring in somebody for the minimum who can actually be a part of this team if they want to make the playoffs. They can get somebody more productive, especially for their needs, than Jake Layman.
Yeah, and also you mentioned they have the full MLE available, so they're really right up there with teams like the Celtics in terms of theoretical spending power. If in fact they could get off of Vonleh, they could get off a Layman. Now, I mean, they still would only have about $2 million below the tax there, but yeah, you would think that Layman, hard to believe he'll be a part of their plans, just has not been able to hit a shot in his career, and is an older player already. I think he might even be 24 already. You could move on from he and Vonleh. Maybe if you can get off of both those guys, you can give up a second, or you can throw in enough cash and a second as well. I mean, they have those picks from Miami in 2021. You know, would that be enough to do it? And you know, maybe not. It all depends what the market is. Certainly those teams are gonna be trying to auction off their space. And as for Leonard, some of the other bad contracts, Turner, for example, I mean, maybe we could see, we talked about this in the Nets section of, you know, it could be Turner and a first for someone who makes similar money, maybe a year shorter, but a more useful player as well. You know, maybe that could be, or same type of thing for Harkless, probably not Leonard because he's just totally dead salary. But I don't suspect a move move like that will go down, I would think they would certainly listen and try to. And if the price seems right at that point, do it. But you have to imagine, even for Leonard, you know, he's got $20 million in dead money left on his contract. Is that, you know, worth a first rounder to somebody? Yeah, you know, that's probably right on the cusp, right? Because, you know, that's kind of what we've seen, what it costs to dump, you know, $20 million in dead salary for a first round pick is kind of about what the market has been. Back in the day, it was 10, but the cap was half what it is now. So Damari Carroll had $30 million left, but still was the guy who could play. So if you wanted to say he had $10 million in value left, so that's $20 million. That's what the Raptors had to pay a first rounder to dump him. So there's that, I think, is a pretty good rule of thumb. And we'll see whether, in fact, that market tightens up even more with so many teams having overextended themselves in the summer of 2016 and now facing tax consequences.
If it can get down to 15, that would be huge for some of these teams that have space. $15 million for a first-round pick, and then maybe the 20 is more of a better first-round pick would be interesting. And if that's the case, then Portland doesn't really need to make that move now as long as they do Vonleh. And that's why Vonleh is the most likely player to be traded, because he just fits all these things, and it's not like losing him is big for them, because while there are still believers in his potential, there's something that intrigues me about him. He did some nice stuff at center last year when Nurkic got hurt. They have so many other options there. I mean, they drafted Zach Collins in the lottery. They traded up to get him. They have Nurkic. They have Caleb Swanigan, who is a big man, and they still have Myers Leonard. So
remember when he was actually playing for them earlier in the year?
Yeah, I do, but not now. And also, like, I think for them, just getting another guard, Napier's having a wonderful year for them, but just getting somebody else as another option. They never even really replaced Alan Crabb. Napier does some of that stuff, but to get somebody else who can hit an open shot or do something like that, whether it's on a buyout guy, would be so huge for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what they need, is just one more shooter who can defend a little bit on the wing. Any kind of like stretch four or stretch five option would be great. I mean, the emergence of Napier really has saved them to some degree as well. I don't want to think about where they would be without him, especially in those games that Lillard missed. But I mean, last thing on them, actually two more things. They have basically $5 million in dead money on their books right now. They still have Anderson Varejao on their books. You remember that he got traded away from the Cavs a couple of years ago. That's actually what led to him signing with the Warriors, was he got dumped by the Cavs and they picked up a first rounder from them. And then Festus Ezeli is still $333K for the next couple of years. And of course, Nicholson is a whole 7 years out at that $2.8 million. Pretty impressive for him to get stretched 1 year after signing a four-year contract. So and then also, just, we don't need to get into this too much, but I think underrated, all of these restricted free agents that they have and their money crunch. I mean, they're going to be playing some real hardball with these guys in the offseason, and I would not want to be a restricted free agent on their roster.
Ed Davis is also in a tough spot because they need to keep him, but it seems like he probably won't be long for their team just because they have so many other ways to spend their money. Yeah. So that was the original idea that I had, was, oh, they can trade Ed Davis, that would clear even more money and do that, but it has borne out that they need him this year, and they have a reason to keep him, so I think they will.
Let's move on to OKC now, another team I don't expect to be particularly active. The big watchword there is their $13.3 million over the tax line, and since time immemorial, Kyle Singler, we've talked about them potentially trying to cut bait with him. He's got finally, mercifully, only 1 year left after this one at $5 million, and then has a non-guaranteed year the last year, so it'll be an interesting question with him of whether, you know, they're very impacted with their first round pick, obviously, from the Jeremy Grant trade, from the Enes Kanter trade years ago. Minnesota and Orlando now have those picks. And so you have to imagine, though, Singler would be the watcher, because if they could get rid of him right now, their tax payment is going to be $24 million. You knock that down, you know, he's got probably about $2 million left to be paid in salary this year. And then you knock down that tax payment by another $11 million by moving on for him. So it certainly makes a ton of sense. Where are they in terms of their cash right now?
They still have all of it, so they could do some things there which would be interesting, and they could really save some money. But the other guy that I wanted to float by you is, how are they feeling about Alex Abrines? He has been in the rotation at moments. He was, you know, he played a little bit more at a point when Roberson was out, but then, you know, he's had a couple of 15 minute games, but then he also has just had some marginalized when Terrence Ferguson especially has been out there, and he is talented. talented, but he's getting 5.7 this year, 5.4, and then is restricted. He is definitely less dead money than Singler, which means that you could attach a lesser asset to maybe get rid of him. I don't know how they're feeling about that right now.
Yeah, in theory, he's their second best shooting guard on this roster. I know Ferguson was starting over him, but Abrines is probably still better than Ferguson, I would say. But yeah, it's definitely, you're going to be hard pressed to move on from anyone who's actually playing on this team, even if some of those guys aren't great values, because it's just, how do you replace it? Now, maybe the thought is they can get into the buyout market, but they, unlike a lot of these teams, are very limited. They use their full taxpayer MLE on Patrick Patterson. And so, you know, they're over the apron, so they cannot use the rest of their MLE now. So they're really limited to minimums, but they also can offer the chance to actually play on a good team for any buyout candidate. So, I mean, I would have to imagine, especially when you consider that they are just so limited in the first rounders that they can trade, that, you know, what it's probably going to happen is Sam Presti will say, hey, you know what? Second rounder, we'll throw all your cash at you, all the cash at you, take on Singler and hope that somebody bites. And if they don't, then tough cookies, pay the luxury tax.
And when they put this team together, I think that had to have been the idea. It's so hard for them to cut money. They can't. So to give a finer point on it, they can't trade a first until 2024 unless it's inside protection. And the inside protection will be okay there, just because you can do that. And I would assume the first pick is going to convey to Minnesota this year, which means the second one, the timeline will be 2020. But that's still a lot to ask for another team. So we'll see where it goes from here. But I think what Presti told ownership was, hey, this is a team that's worth it. We could do it for 1 year. They don't know if Paul George is going to stick around. I also think if they traded somebody with actual value to the team, that wouldn't necessarily look good for him as a potential free agent. They have Russ committed, but they don't have him committed. So
yeah, maybe there's a way that they could move Singler and get back someone who actually could help them. I mean, what do you see as their needs overall if they were to try and go in that direction?
I still think they need another wing in their rotation, just somebody who they can trust. But
what, in OKC? Really? They're short on two-way wings in OKC?
The other one, this is more of a minimum thing to me, is another center. I mean, when Steven Adams went down, he has been pretty durable over time, but they don't have any other options. And so just a minimum guy, even if it's a regular season thing, assuming he stays healthy, would be a big help.
Yeah, their second units can really be taken advantage of because they're small and they can't rebound, but they also don't stretch people out. And so other teams, you know, it's not like, oh man, we're so afraid to put a center on the floor against these guys, and you can do that and then just kill them on the glass whenever Steven Adams is out of the game. So yeah, I do think getting, and that's something that might be realistic for them, is to pick up someone who can play a little bit of center. But yeah, I mean, you know, some of those names, maybe like Ersan Ilyasova and they just got to throw something at the Hawks. I mean, maybe someone has interest in Josh Huestis, who had his fourth year rookie option declined. He's shown a flash or two this year, but, you know, still a guy who I think has a long way to go. You know, Dewayne Dedmon, probably the price would be too high for him. And so you really, again, it would be great if they could trade a first rounder. I mean, that would make sense, you know, a lottery protected first rounder given where they are, but they really can't, you know, unless they want to start talking about 2022, they really probably can't do it, unless they want to get super creative and say, hey, you know, that Jeremy Grant pick that the Magic own in 2020, that's top 20 protected, will trade you like the other six slots in the lottery of that pick or something. You know, that's like, and I don't know if a team would take that, if anybody really is. I mean, maybe the Hawks would be interested enough and just kind of take, you know, flipping a coin on that gamble, and if it doesn't turn out fine, you know, then it turns into a second rounder or something later. But I am skeptical that they can move off of Singler without including a first round pick, because they really don't have much in the way of assets, unless they wanted to even include like a Ferguson or something, which I don't think they would be willing.
I don't think they would either. I think they'll grin and bear it this year, and then next year, let's say Paul George comes back, maybe then they could use the stretch provision, and that would moderate it, because they could stretch him over Singler, 5 years, sure. Or they could dump him and someone else could stretch him. That amount of money is pretty tolerable for, you know, somebody might even have a trade exception or something like that that they could use.
Yeah, anything else to talk about with these guys? I mean, I guess, you know, James Ennis might be someone that they could try to get. Again, you know, does Memphis want to take on more money? Probably not. So I really just don't see, maybe like a Joe Harris actually would be someone who could help them. I said this before, which was incorrect, that he would be a restricted free agent. That's not true. But he's someone that they would have full bird rights on if they got him from the Nets. And maybe a Singler, if they traded Singler for Harris, I think that would probably work into the Nets space. Maybe they could throw in another guy as well there. But, and, you know, again, they would have to obviously give up some money, and Harris is worth something. So it's all just about the price. I mean, this team has needs for sure. They're very limited in terms of their depth. That center, you mentioned that. Some more shooting, you mentioned that. Anything even pretending to be a two-way player on the wing could be really useful for these guys, but I'm just not sure if they have the assets, if they're willing to go even further in. But Sam Presti does have a record of making a move nearly every deadline.
He does, and one challenge for OKC that might lead them to making a move at the deadline rather than the buyouts is if they're looking for a wing. I don't think many wings are going to get bought out, because they'll get moved because there's so much value. And so maybe
Carter actually could be someone.
I was actually about to say him. Yeah, he's one because he's making $8 million. So you could see a circumstance where he's either gets left on the Kings and just would rather be on somebody competitive, or somebody else gets him because Sacramento's taking on money for a future year and they got him more as an expiring contract. But other than that, I mean, even like Marco Bellinelli, I think Marco Bellinelli is going to end up on a team that can use him rather than getting bought out.
Yeah. Maybe Richard Jefferson, who's not playing at all on the Nuggets, although the Nuggets might not want to buy him out so he can go to OKC, who are theoretically their competition. So let's turn to the Nuggets now, in a bit of a free fall of late. In fact, they are out of the playoffs as of this podcast. Is that correct? Yes, they are number 9 at 23-23,
half game
behind the Clippers.
And they're in a tough spot in kind of a similar way to Portland, except that they don't have a billionaire owner. And so what their challenge is
do have a billionaire owner. Stan Kroenke has plenty of money. He just
doesn't spend it on the Nuggets
on this team.
so they're under the tax this year, so that part they don't have like Portland, but they're looking at a significant bill next year. I have it that they would be over the tax in 18-19 with Jokic getting his raise, so they'll decline his team option to make him a restricted free agent, then pay him his money so they don't have to deal with him being unrestricted. And if Wilson Chandler or Darrell Arthur opt in, so with those guys, and they already have Gary Harris locked in, they'll be over the tax even without Will Barton, and Barton has been an important part of this team. So the expectation with the Nuggets, and this is hard to take in many ways, is that they're probably going to be looking to unload money. The fortunate thing for their fans is that they can unload money that is not particularly productive for making their team good this year.
Yeah, Fareed, Arthur, both out of the rotation. Those guys make over $20 million combined. Wilson Chandler, he's got that player option for next year, which we thought he was likely to opt out of the way he's played this year. Perhaps not so much. Do $12.8 million next year. I mean, I guess if we're gonna say, they do have some ammo here, Danny. I mean, they've got Hernan Gomez, who's out of the rotation right now. Malik Beasley, they're probably relying on him to take Barton's place next year. I don't know if anyone has any interest in Tyler Lydon. Probably not, I'm guessing. They have Emmanuel Mudiay as well. I mean, this is really the time to move him. You would think with the emergence of Jamal Murray this year, it's clear that Mudiay probably has more value in trade than he does to the Nuggets. If there's a team that wants to take a chance on him, see if give him a year-long audition as a potential starting point guard whom they could re-sign in restricted free agency or get on a cheap extension. So they've got some assets. Do they want to attach those assets to guys just to dump salary for next year? Because there's no issue with the tax this year. They're only $6 million over the cap, so no issues there. But the question is, do they do that, or they try to make this team better? I mean, there's a lot of pressure on this team to make the playoffs. Paul Millsap not due back until at the earliest after the All-Star break, and who knows how well he's going to play coming off that wrist injury once that happens. So, I mean, they definitely need a two-way option on the wing. Big surprise. This entire division seems to need that, except maybe the Jazz. So I think the usual slate of candidates here come to mind, a James Ennis or I'm not sure that Tyreek really is their kind of guy. If the Jazz consider themselves out of it, I don't think, maybe Joe Johnson, but again, I think they have enough scoring on this team. I mean, they need somebody who can defend the best threes on the other teams. And on the list of guys that I would consider to be available, I think that, Ennis is probably the only guy who really fits into that. Wes Matthews, maybe someone who they could try and trade for, and throw in a Hernan Gomez or a Beasley or something like that, because Lyles has supplanted Hernan Gomez. I still am a believer in Hernan Gomez's potential. He's kind of his year ruined by that mono issue. So maybe Fareed and Hernan Gomez for Wes Matthews, that could be a construct that might work, and Matthews could start for them. Doesn't give them much tax relief for next year, but we'll see whether they're actually willing to pay it for 1 year or not. But I mean, there's a lot of pressure on this team to make the playoffs. There's a lot of pressure on Mike Malone, I'm sure, to make the playoffs. So you have to expect them to do something. thing, I think, to try and shore up on the wing just a little bit. And I mean, Chandler having really a difficult season is probably your number one choice of someone that they feel like they could upgrade.
Something else they could really use is shot creation on the second unit, especially if it's somebody that is under team control for more than 1 year. Because if they don't think Moutier is the answer, then going
he
in
hasn't
another...
been playing at all, by the way.
Right. So Will Barton can be that guy for this year, but other than their own first round pick, when we consider the tax burden on this team, they're not going to have many mechanisms for that. So I would say that's not a primary target, but an interesting secondary one if the right player were available. And those are certainly more numerous than wings that can fit what they're trying to do. So it is really about what assets they want to kind of put to bear on this. And they have significant ones, but what are they willing to use now? And then what do they want to save to keep as ammunition to do the later stuff that it sounds like they're going to need to do?
Oh, you know, we've totally been forgetting most likely to be traded in this.
Well, it was Vonleh for the Blazers, right?
Yes, definitely. Singler, I guess, for the Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be Singler, I think.
God, you know how expensive it is that Nick Collison is a player on their roster rather than like an assistant coach?
Well, and not only that, but like they need that roster spot. Like anybody who could play at all, I mean, just any backup center that they could have gotten for the minimum instead of him on that roster spot would actually be contributing for them right now.
Is now a time for me to bring up the stat that I didn't mention, even though it's near and dear to your heart, about how much the, as of right now, how much the Ronnie Price guarantee is costing them?
There's never a bad time for that, Denny.
The Ronnie Price guarantee at this moment with their current bill is costing the Oklahoma City Thunder $8.5 million this season.
That's bad. Yeah. Incredible that they gave him a second year. Incredible that they cut him. Incredible that they didn't, before he even played a game for them, to keep Samaje Christen, right? Like, and it's not even like, and now Samaje Christen isn't even on the roster either. It's not like, oh man, this guy was so unbelievable. Like, he just seized the backup point guard job by the horns. And then that they didn't stretch Ronnie Price either, when they're just in this tax hell for these next couple of years. I mean, really pretty remarkable there. I mean, obviously Sam Presti has had a number of coups over the last year and a half or so, so you can't really complain too much, but that one was certainly a head scratcher. So back to the Nuggets, most likely to be traded for them?
Huh. My instinct is to go with a sweetener because they have so many options for the veteran salary to move, but yeah. I'm going to go with Darrell Arthur anyway.
Yeah, see, I don't think it makes sense to move either Chandler or Arthur until the offseason when they really do start to run into the tax concerns. I think the only way those guys get traded is if they actually get someone back who can play and throw in an asset as well. And the other thing we didn't talk about too is, you know, Barton is going to be a free agent. We already said they can't afford him. I mean, is there some chance that they would just try and move him and be a little bit more of a seller mentality, especially with this recent downswing? I mean, especially if they continue to lose games like this, you know, maybe they will start to say, hey, you know what, like, we could move on for him. Maybe we'll get back someone who can still play. Maybe they feel like they can just try to play Hernan Gomez at the three. That was kind of their plan at the start of the year. Not his natural position, but nonetheless. And you know, actually, I think I'm going to say Moutier actually would probably be my guess. I think it's going to be Moutier.
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah, I might. And also, Barton's full bird rights are valuable to another team.
Right.
It's something that's
and not so much to Denver because of their constraint.
Yeah, I mean, I would seriously consider moving him. I think I know who had Denver in our mock deadline last year because they made the big Millsap trade. I know it was Feldman was one side.
I think it might have been, was it me?
I think it might have been
I'm always the sellers. I think I traded all those guys from Miami. Yeah, so I think it was Feldman actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we created this great team with Dragic and Millsap on it. And didn't have to give up Murray or Jokic. That was actually a pretty badass team for the Nuggets last year. But you know,
and they didn't have to pay Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes during the dog days in March, I mean, we won't do this as a whole show, but maybe like we'll just break it out after at like the end of like five shows in a row to just pick out like the best and worst deals of the first two mock trade deadlines to just like make fun of the people who made awful deals as they would have turned out. But yeah, all right. So yeah, I'll go with Moutier on the Nuggets, and
I'm going to change mine to Moutier too because the logic is there.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not playing at all, like, and I think he has some modicum of value, you know, even if you get only a second rounder for him at this point, it seems like you're probably should do that. I mean, you know, he does, in theory, he does make sense as a third guard behind Murray and Harris if they have to move on from Barton in the offseason, or if Barton moves on from them, perhaps more accurately, as a free agent. So maybe, you know, just getting a second rounder is not enough for him. Maybe they feel like he still has potential, but certainly, you know, in terms of all the on-off metrics, Moutier has been a very negative player all 3 years of his career.
Are you ready to move on to the Jazz?
Let's do it.
So the Jazz are about $8 million below the luxury tax. They have all 15 roster spots occupied at the moment, and they are in an unusual place because of how much variability is in their 2018-19 books. They have non-guarantees for Tabo Sefolosha, who is now out for the rest of the season with MCL surgery. Jerebko.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to eliminate his guarantee in my projected salary for them right now.
Yeah, so you have him, Jerebko, and Udo, and I think those two, who combine for about $8 million, those are looking good. I think those numbers for right now, depending on how Utah sees it. But then they also have restricted Rodney Hood, Dante Exum, Raul Neto. So their books can go all over the place. They have, I expect them, somebody was talking about this with me on Twitter, I expect them to function as an over-the-cap team next year, but that can change in the drop of a hat depending on how they see this. And that's part of why the Rodney Hood stuff, I think Mark Stein was the first person I saw talking about it, is so compelling, because I thought they would just wait him out, wait out the restricted market and do it. But as I've said for years now, if you're not sold on a restricted free agent, you should trade them before that point, because it's a lot harder to trade them once they're on that contract, even if this is a tighter market than it was in 16 and 17 when some of those guys got overpaid.
To hit on your earlier point, if they moved on from Hood, Exum, Derek Favors, who you have to imagine will not be back and is a guy who rumor has that they're looking to trade, and Exum, you know, all their restricted free agents plus Favors, they would have $17 million or so in space. And then if they wanted to move on from Jerebko and Udo as well, although as I agree with you that those are value contracts, they could get to almost $25 million in space for this team without giving up really anyone who I think they would view as essential. Now, Hood, I agree with you, has a lot of potential. Just reading the tea leaves, you get the impression that they just are frustrated with his inability to stay healthy, as I would be too at this point. I mean, whenever he gets rolling, you know, he'll miss a couple of games. He just, you know, hasn't had any major injuries, but he's really, you know, muscle pulls, knee sprains, ankle sprain. It's always something, you know, every five or six games with this guy, there's always seems to be some kind of an issue. And, you know, if he's going to stay healthy, I don't know that they can really keep him that way. Hood does have a small cap hold for another team. You know, his cap hold is only $7 million next year. So that's really not too bad if a team wanted to acquire them, even a team that's trying to use cap space and build around young players. Who would you see as potential suitors for Hood around the league?
I mean, everybody needs wings pretty much. I mean, that's you could go in so many different directions with
him. He's not really a three though, which maybe
he's a two.
Market a little bit. Even at 6'8", he's got a pretty short wingspan, not really a physical defender. And probably, I think, with the struggles to stay healthy, projects perhaps as more of a bench guy.
I mean, there's so many teams that could use him, but the big question is going to be who, if they're willing to move him, who gives up the best asset? And also, is Utah willing to make a bigger deal? Because something that I've been looking at with them is I've been eyeballing 2019 as the year for them to spend, because that's when Rubio and Alec Burks come off the books. So they'll have Mitchell will be closer to his prime then. They can have a much clearer idea of what they want to do with Rudy Gobert. Ingles' contract actually declines. So if they want to go in that direction, then they could use maybe Hood as a part of the vehicle, or Favors, Johnson, all that kind of stuff, to add some money next year. And they could actually really do some stuff here. But they could also make a smaller deal and just say, hey, anybody willing to give us a first?
Yeah. And that, you'd imagine that would be pretty close to the price there. I think they would pull the trigger on that. Just again, due to the health issues. You know, if he could stay healthy, he'd be worth more than that. You know, certainly a team like the Mavs is one that you could look at. I think actually maybe Phoenix could be a potential destination when you consider the superfluous first rounders that they have and how many young guys they have already. You know, he's a little redundant with Booker, but if you're looking at him as a bench guy and also just a guy who can shoot the ball, I mean, that's what Phoenix desperately needs, is someone who can space the floor a little bit. You know, Indiana is a cap team next year, but, you know, again, could use somebody off the bench, and that $7 million cap hold really isn't going to kill your cap space too badly. So a lot of teams, I think, could be interested in him and then hope to get him on a pretty decent deal if he's been injured a lot of the year as well.
You know who has a couple of late firsts and would be an interesting one because he's a restricted free agent? The Atlanta Hawks. He'd be a late entrant into the Hawks University, but I actually think he'd be a wonderful fit for what they're doing.
Yeah, and they have a solid medical staff there as well. They've got that P3 installation that's going up there now. You know, Philly would be an interesting one too, with only a $7 million cap hold. Maybe they would feel like they could get something done. What about Chicago? I mean, there's been talk that Nikola Mirotic could be coming to the Jazz. Dennis Lindsay, I think, said recently recently that when they traded Trey Lyles away, they knew they were going to be looking for a 6'10 guy who could shoot, and Jarebko is just not quite that type of player as an outside threat. Mirotić for Favors has been talked about, but the Bulls wanting a first round pick back. But I wonder whether the Bulls would just say, hey, we'd take Hood for Mirotić instead. Hood is quite redundant, of course, with Zach LaVine. They have a very similar game. But, you know, I mean, Hood, even if he is a two, would still be immediately the best three on the Bulls roster.
I mean, I could throw him, honestly, on half the teams in the league without even...
It's really true, right? He'd be a nice fit on San Antonio even, too. You know, that's another one where, again, not the kind of move the Spurs would usually make. But yeah, there's a lot of teams. And I think, especially if you're a team... I mean, the difficulty comes from if you're a team that's more of a rebuilding team, then maybe your first is too good to give up for Rodney Hood. And if you're a bad team who's already going to be capped out, then, you know, perhaps his bird rights would be worthwhile for you. So it's very interesting to see here what's going to happen with Hood. Anything you was going to say on him, or we should talk maybe about Favors as well?
We can talk about Favors. So he's certainly a big, which position and whether that matters is in the eye of the beholder. $12 million flat this year, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. So his bird rights do have some value for the right team, and he can contribute to the right team. But big men are just overflowing in the league. So while he is unusual in the talent and the expiring contract, he is not like, there's no team that's just aching for a big right now that I can think of. So that's what leads to the idea of the surprising, like the rumors that he was being part of the Mirotić trade, where he, you know, he's probably better than being kind of more salary filler, but value is value because of scarcity.
Yeah, I mean, there would Joe Johnson could be another one maybe who would be salary filler if there's a Mirotić trade involving Hood or a draft pick. But yeah, I mean, Favors, it's tough to say really, because, you know, if you're going to be a cap team, you're not that interested in him. I think he could actually really help the Bucks, but the Bucks, you know, are really going to, again, they're already out that pick for getting Bledsoe, and so I'm not really sure that that's something that's going to work that well. He could really help the Thunder also, but once again, the Thunder just don't really have the type of asset. Much of this, I think, also depends for Utah. I mean, they finally had a nice win against the Clippers at home the other night, but they're still quite behind everyone else. I mean, I think they're 7 games under .500 right now, and so they have a much easier schedule coming up, and Rudy Gobert is back now, which helps them. But, you know, they're going to be hard pressed to get back in the playoff mix. But if they can do that between now and February 8th, that's going to make a big difference to what their mindset is going to be. But I think they have no illusions about where their team is right now. They got a big star in Mitchell. He and Gobert could be a nice core. And so, you know, now that you say this, I'm really starting to think of them more as a cap team, as a team that could very easily have $25 million in space next year. And then, you know, even if they really had a big fish interested, they could stretch Burks. They could trade Burks or Rubio as well if they really needed to create even more space than that. And this, you know, for a Utah team that traditionally has not been a free agent destination, they'll be one of the better destinations of teams that could have cap space this offseason. So it might be the time for them to strike, potentially, just given how limited the market's going to be for a lot of these guys.
Can you imagine how intriguing their defense could be in a couple years? Because one of the big ways to spend money in 2018 is on those two-way two guards. And if they could get one of those guys next to Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, it'd be really fun.
Yeah, so they basically have all their own picks. You know, I don't see them. You know, Mirotić is an interesting one, and he would impact their cap space, obviously, in the summer of 2018. But I'm not sure that they could do better than Mirotić for 11 or 12 million or so. The spacing that he provides is certainly would be very worthwhile for them. They've got Rudy Gobert behind him to help maybe limit some of his defensive issues. Yeah, this is becoming a very intriguing team where they really looked like they were in purgatory. But now with Mitchell maturing into this force, especially if you want to play him at the one, opens up a lot of ideas here. They could also go the direction, maybe if they're out of it, of just trying to trade Jarebko and Udo, try to get maybe a pick back. Again, probably a second rounder. There's no way you're getting a first. They could try to go the trade those guys for some bad salary, you know, and maybe that gets you a first. Maybe if they're out of it, you could trade Jarebko and Udo for Jarrell Arthur and hope to get something. You know, maybe they could get Hernan Gomez in that deal from Denver. But I'm not sure that Jarebko or Udo really helps Denver, so never mind. I
mean, well, they can use Tabo as ballast as well.
Yes, no, you're right about that. That's probably even more likely. So maybe we'll see a move like that potentially. There's just so many directions that they can go in. I kind of wish they were just a little bit more in contention, and then they would really be fascinating because they could go in either direction. But I think, again, with Donovan Mitchell, they have hope now. They've got Gobert under contract for 3 more years after this one. They can afford to build slowly and not just try to chase the playoffs this year. And I mean, they know from having played Golden State in the playoffs last year how good they are. They have no delusion grandeur, I think, with this team. And they're not under the pressure after that body blow from Hayward like a team like the Clippers or Denver or even maybe Portland is to make the playoffs this year. So I think, and they have a lot of job security here as well. So I think that they will probably go more in the future maximizing direction than trying to get better for this year. And they have a lot of expiring contracts too. I mean, they could even get up to over $20 million, or $30 million in expiring contracts if they want to. That's how they could, of course, get to having all that cap here.
Yeah, I mean, they could be the facilitator also in a deal, a three-team deal or anything else. Like, they should just be in almost every conversation because of they are basically the only team, one of the only teams that has expiring money and might not have a desire to be a cap team, though they could be. I mean, they could do it either way. And you could even fold a Mirotić deal in with other stuff. Like, they can make this as complicated as they need to do it. They're maybe, to me, they're not the most interesting team because a lot of it is theoretical potential, but the options available to them might be more than any other team.
Also intriguing is that in the last few days, Dante Exum has been cleared at least for non-contact drills. So you'd imagine that maybe he could be back within the next month or so. Whether, you know, he would want to play together with Mitchell, I mean, I think Mitchell has so far surpassed him now that I don't like the fit of those two guys together that much with Exum's shooting struggles. And so, but Exum could be another one of these guys, like we were talking about with Moutier, where a team might just want to take him on and try to get him in restricted free agency for a low price and see whether he can be their point guard of the future instead of, you know, whereas the Jazz, I think, you know, hopefully they're going to view Mitchell as that.
With Exum, trade fit there would be a team that doesn't need immediate cap space, but has the ability to pay him. So like Orlando would be an option here because his cap hold doesn't matter at all to them, but restricted rights really do.
Yeah, and Exum actually has a huge cap hold, $14 million. So
right.
Most likely to be traded. I guess I will go with Favors simply because you imagine there's nearly no way that he's going to return. His bird rights could be valuable to a team. There are a lot of teams that could kind of use him. And then also just simply the fact that it's been reported that he's been in some of the talks as well. So that's why I would go with Favors. But, you know, really it seems like half this roster could be on the potential.
I agree with Favors. We've heard that. And also it makes intuitive sense because I don't think I've heard a single thing saying he sounds like he wants to re-sign there. So if a player is going to leave, they have Gobert back at this point. And if they lose Gobert again, then they're going to be probably going in the other direction anyway. So I don't think there's much of a reason to keep him.
Just better their draft pick at that point. I mean, Favors is almost counterproductive.
Right. So yeah, I would say he's most likely.
Let's get to the Wolves, a team I don't think we expect that much from them. They don't have much in terms of money left for the buyout market. They're $6 million over the cap right now. But the greater issue, of course, is that with Wiggins' extension kicking in next year, that max extension.
But yeah, I mean, they do really have a lot of needs. To me, depth on the wing, Shabazz Muhammad has been such a big disappointment for them. And they are going to play Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins a lot of time, but just having another player who can be part of the solution there. And more floor spacing at the forward positions is going to be an issue for them. It might not even be in the starting lineup, just have other options. And Nemanja Bjelica is a restricted free agent. I have no idea how they're feeling about that right now.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he's someone that, especially because he's a little bit older, I think he's going to be 30 once he reaches this summer, hasn't amassed much of a resume. I think he'd be, you know, kind of a one, or he's making $3 million or so now. I wouldn't see him doing much better than that, and not for maybe longer even than like 2 years or so, unless there's just some team that's really fired up for him. And he might even just want to go back to Europe as well. I mean, I think he's a guy who has a very versatile game in Europe and was a EuroLeague MVP, and just standing around on the perimeter while all these guys chuck shots and shooting a spot up every once in a while probably isn't really that fun for him.
Yeah, that could be. That absolutely could be. And him, like, the other problem when an older guy is restricted, something that you and I both don't like, is that he could just see such a low market that he's just going, well, screw it. I'm not going to wait this out and see where it goes.
Yeah. Well, his qualifying offer actually, though,
that's true,
would be 125% of what he's making now. So that would actually be over $4 million for 1 year. You know, that's probably enough that he might end up just taking that. And so it's quite possible that he just wouldn't get a qualifying offer next year, given, you know, and we'll see how he finishes the rest of the year. He's been injured for part of the year, but was a part of some lineups that were effective for them early, you know, and gives them another option off the bench rather than Gorgui Dieng. So, but if they were just, they don't really have any extra picks. They owe their 2018 lottery protected pick, which is going to go from the Adrian Payne trade to the Hawks, but then they have a replacement of that basically, which is OKC's pick. So it's going to be almost exactly the same pick. They might actually even move up a slot there, getting OKC's lotto protected pick from the Rubio deal via Utah, which was originally in the Enes Kanter trade. So they're basically pick neutral going forward. I don't see them moving a first rounder, but I could see them, you know, trying to move seconds and get just a little bit more depth for this year. But anyone that they would need to re-sign, you have to imagine, is not going to help them much. But they're another team that just needs backup wings so desperately.
And while they have the means somewhat to do it right now, just in terms of underneath the luxury tax, they don't have an exception that they can really use there. And they can't do anything in terms of a multi-year commitment. So it's going to be very hard for them to make this work. They'll probably just have to get the best guy they can on the buyout market. I think that's where it's going to go.
Hey, remember that Justin Patton exists?
He had a good game in the G League, I think. I think I saw that on something recently.
Yeah, his overall stats aren't great. 53% true shooting, pedestrian rebound rates, getting a lot of block shots. That's really the one thing that he's been doing. Probably still right for a big two, actually, and a higher usage. So we'll see. I mean, he's played 15 games in Iowa, started five of them, but hasn't done enough to where anybody's going to be like champing a bit, take him on, I'm sure.
Not like they could use OG Anunoby instead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just in terms of the usual names that are available, I mean, all the ones we've been talking about, and James Ennis is one, you know, and we don't even know if Memphis wants to move him necessarily either. I think they should, given where they are as a franchise, but they might want to try to keep him around. You know, Tyreek Evans certainly doesn't do them any good, I think, because they already have too many creators on this team, if anything. You know, Joe Harris was a guy who I think we mentioned could be useful. Marco Bellinelli might be someone they would look at. Harris has a little bit more size and defense than Bellinelli, I think, at this point in his career. But certainly those guys could play a little bit of three for you on a bench unit. I'm not really sure who else really would tickle Tom Thibodeau's fancy right now as GM.
It's a bad thing to have as your largest need because there just aren't other options.
Most likely to be traded for these guys because I really don't see them doing much, but you know, I could be wrong.
Bielitsa.
They seem more like, yeah, Bielitsa.
Yeah, I mean, because now is probably not the time to move Cole Aldrich. I'm sure they would love to because he has $2 million after this year, but it feels like that if there is something there, it'll be available in the offseason.
You know, for next year, Jamal Crawford has a player option, which he, of course, is going to exercise, you would imagine. Yeah, next year even looks so ugly because I was thinking, oh, maybe what they could do is trade Aldrich and take on someone who makes $7 million through next year, give someone a little relief, but also maybe get someone who can play a little. But even that, I mean, I don't think they even really have the space to add someone who makes $7 million next year over what Aldridge makes. I mean, he's probably going to get stretched anyway. I mean, they're $4 million into the tax next year without even before they do anything. I guess, well, no, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. If they moved on from Bielitsa, they would have about $3 million left in room before the tax. And that's with a projected waiver of Cole Aldridge. So maybe they would feel like, all right, we can take on someone who makes a little bit less than Aldridge next year. You know, someone who makes $5 million and give a team a little bit of salary relief. But I don't think so. That seems unlikely. But I will say Aldridge would be my most likely to trade.
Okay.
Okay, indeed. We can end it with a bang here. Don't forget our sponsors, Indochino. Use that cap space code. Get any premium suit for just $359 that is custom, actually fits you well. Helix Sleep, helixsleep.com/capspace gets you $50 off your custom mattress. Custom is the theme of our advertisers today. Don't forget about the mock trade deadline coming up. Hopefully have our first one out on Tuesday night. Tomorrow we'll catch up on some news and also do the last division, the Central, which of course that'll include the Cavs, so that'll be pretty interesting. The Bulls, Mirotic as well, so lots of interesting stuff to talk about. Detroit looks like they might be trying to make a move, so the Central is pretty interesting, I think, so that's why we saved it for last, and we will talk to y'all then.